Hey, parents. Welcome back to Minnesota Nice Investor Goes to College. We're your host, Mark Struthers, a certified financial planner, a chartered financial analyst, and founder of Sona Wealth Management, helps you balance preparing for college and retirement. Let's continue our college funding journey.
Welcome, parents. Welcome to another episode of Minnesota Nice Investor Goes to College. It's 2021, and I hope your year is off to a good start. We have a great guest to get your college funding journey off to a good start for 2021. He is someone that is very well suited to help you balance living for today and planning for college and retirement tomorrow. John Hupalo is the founder of Invite Education, including MyCollegeCorner.com, which is a website that my wife and I are using for our two boys. It is extremely useful, even for our seventh grader. The tools that are in the checklist that he has there, they're age-specific, and those small steps, as we talk about small steps, large outcomes, those are great even for younger kids, and they don't take long, so it's a good thing to check out. John is also an author of Plan and Finance Your Family's College Dreams. It's an Amazon bestseller, and both with his book and website, I think you're going to find that one thing that is impressive is that he does speak in plain English, and he takes something that's kind of complex, a lot of terminology that is industry specific. It's kind of like the finance world, and he does present it in a very, very understandable way. Here is my interview with John.
Happy New Year, John. How are things on the East Coast?
Mark, things are really great here from the perspective that we have a year behind us. Hopefully the COVID year is the worst of it is behind us, and we're looking forward to having a great 2021. How are things for you?
Good, good. We're in the Midwest from Minnesota. We're hunkered down, but again, 2021 brings some renewed optimism. So we're hopeful. It really can't get much worse, can it?
Well, hopefully not. And, you know, I'm with you. I like to be optimistic about this. And you know, a lot of times I know you want to talk about planning and paying for college, and people sometimes sort of get caught in this rut where they say, oh, things are so bad, and why should I look up? And I think you're right. We have to look up, and we have to look forward and find ways to have successes. And I'm hopeful that this next group of students going to plan and pay for college can have great success, even though their experience is a lot different than the one UI and their their sort of brothers and sisters 2 years ago had, but they have a great opportunity. And I really, you know, take my hat off to you to raise this topic and have a chance to talk about it today. So thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we often say making the most of what you have, making most of the resources around you. I got to ask, your resume is distinguished. What led you to founding Invite College and My College Corner? Because you originally started in investment banking. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I spent way too many years, in fact, more than two decades in that business, and actually had the opportunity to be the chief financial officer of a publicly traded student loan company back in the early 2000s into mid-2000s. And it really wasn't until my daughters were getting into the college process themselves, and I looked at my wife one day, and she's really the expert in all this because she went through it, kind of held the girls' hands going through that whole process. But I was on the sidelines, and all of a sudden, literally on the sidelines at the soccer fields where my daughters were, at the cocktail parties, and my friends were coming up to me saying, oh, well, this is going on, and my guy said I should be doing that. And I knew, like, no question, it was bad advice or myths that they were running on. And so I started talking to them about that, and I said, no, that's just not the way this process works. And it really caused me to think hard, and I've always wanted to start a business. And my good friend, a former client, and co-founder and co-author of our book, Peter Mazareas, and I had a conversation. I said, Peter, I think it's time to do something about this. I'm willing to try to take the plunge and start a company because I think we need to help demystify this process of planning and paying for college, provide some clarity for folks, and do it in a really sort of plain English, simple way. It's really not that complicated. It's just sort of emotional. And that's what I think drives a lot of the complexity. So that's what we did. We started Invite Education and MyCollegeCorner.com. And frankly, Mark, we're having a great time talking to parents and families about, you know, how to help them have a better outcome in their college search and a better return on their investment in their college career.
Fantastic. And it's a big investment. I mean, that's where investment advisors like me are having to address this more and more, is because it's not like it was for Gen Xers like myself, that we didn't quite have to worry about it like we do now. COVID has certainly thrown a whole different angle to it as well.
Yeah, there's no question about that. But I think at the highest level, you know, talking about micro and macroeconomics, and I know CFAs like you like to talk about all that. You know, as bankers, we're sort of in tune with it. But when I look at a macro perspective for students, not all that much has changed, right? The process of getting to college and what they have to do really hasn't changed that much. How you distinguish yourself as a student to get into the college of your dream really hasn't changed that much. But the tactics have driven pretty substantially by COVID have changed quite a lot. You know, something as simple as the SAT and the ACT and the PSAT and how all that worked, you know, there are some significant issues there, and the schools are trying to be flexible. But this two groups of students, the ones who just graduated from high school and started college this year, and those who are now seniors rising to college, they're really the pioneers here and tactically have had to really adjust on the fly. And I give them a lot of credit for being able to do that.
Yeah. And like you said, it was tough for you as an investment banker who probably has a large capacity for handling data and analyzing things, for you to have trouble. And then you throw in students having to handle COVID. You're right. You got to take your hats off to them. It's a challenging thing. Our audience is certainly across the board on the private client side and the employee wellness. We have a wide range for this podcast, though quite often they're parents of high school students. I have a high school sophomore, so a lot of this stuff is so valuable to me. I'm learning as I go along as well. But especially juniors and seniors, what sort of tactics could they take now to with COVID, the things that they should watch for? What can parents do to help make the most of what's a challenging situation?
Yeah, Mark, I have to tip my hat to you as well. I know that on your podcast and the prior ones, you talked a lot about savings, 529 college savings. And no matter how old your child is, literally from the time they're born right through 12th grade, I think it's really important to have savings and affordability at the top of the list when you're thinking about, you know, what can I do? At my College Corner, we have a phrase we like to say that saving a dollar today is better than borrowing one tomorrow. And literally, you know, folks come up to me and say, oh, wait, you know, it's too late. I have a sophomore or junior in high school, and I really, it's too late for me to save. And I say, you know, it's really not. Because literally every dollar you save might be one that you don't have to borrow. And if you don't have to borrow one, that means you don't have to pay back about 2.5, right? So, you know,
absolutely,
you know, take the interest and get the savings and save while you can. So the first thing that I like to talk about, and I know you do as well, is the idea that it's not too late to start saving no matter what grade your child is in. The markets actually did quite well despite all the turmoil and the volatility last year. So college savings accounts are up pretty substantially from where they were a year ago. So, you know, again, all the more to think about that. But with regard to juniors and seniors in particular, and they're dealing with the COVID, for the juniors in particular, you know, they're looking at this now and they're asking themselves the question, am I going to be stuck in the same situation that the current senior class is in with the unknown? And they're already dealing with it. For instance, the SAT or the PSAT test that they typically take in October, you know, some of them took it. Some of them now are going to take it in January. So again, the testing system is trying to become somewhat flexible, and both the College Board and ACT, they've been trying to do the best they can to adjust their schedules. But frankly, it's a little bit of a mess. You know, some students showed up at some testing centers that weren't open, you know, because the school was closed. And so there is all that turmoil. But again, you know, from the perspective of what should they be doing, they should be studying and then trying to get in, and also realizing that maybe taking a test this year is not going to be necessary for them. There's a group out there, you may know it, Mark, fairtest.org.
Yep.
And fairtest.org, they do a great job. They track all the test optional, test flexible schools. So I looked over the summer, and at that time, there were about 1,300 schools that weren't going to require this next incoming class to use the testing as part of the admissions process. When I looked this morning, that number is up to almost 1,700.
Wow.
So the trend is clearly moving, and this has been going on for about a decade, but the coronavirus has really pushed this to the forefront of saying, you know, are these tests fair? And that's where fairtest.org came at it. They said, you know, these may not be the fairest tests, but also the coronavirus is changing that little process a little bit for students. So I think for juniors in particular, just understanding, you know, what that's going to look like, how testing is going to fit into their strategy for getting into college. You know, again, many of them, lots of them will take it and do well. In order to be considered for the National Merit Scholarship, you actually have to take the PSAT exam, right? So, you know, the reality is when you talk about affordability, well, you know, there's some merit money sitting on the table there with the PSAT test. And so students have an incentive really to go and take that. Same thing with the SATs, even for test optional schools. Many scholarship providers look at SAT scores as a way to market directly to students. So, you know, a lot of times parents and students think about the tests as an admissions part of the process, and clearly it is, but it's also helpful on the financial aid side, right? Because you can get some merit money or you can get some scholarships as a result of that. So again, saving, making sure that the test regime's right. And then I think for the juniors now, they're also going to be somewhat challenged because spring break will be coming up. And that's often a time, you know, you get in the car with your son or your daughter and you go off to a school and take a tour and test it all. And, you know, you have to, again, check with the school and see what they're doing. Again, schools have made some really terrific adjustments, some self-guided walking tours of the campus. They're not doing those big, you know, the tour guide walks backwards for 45 minutes while they smile and talk to you. You might not see that in this next trip around, but, you know, you still have an opportunity to see the school, you know, visit the school virtually. So again, at the high level, the process hasn't really changed much, but at the lower level, we talk about tactics, they are changing pretty considerably.
Yeah, it seems like the acceleration that we saw in retail, COVID brought around the acceleration in retail to Amazon online. It sounds like the testing might be another thing where maybe it accelerated a move away from standardized testing.
Yeah, I think that's somewhat likely, actually. But, you know, the other thing, too, it doesn't mean it's going to be easier to get into a highly selective school or selective school. It just means that the criteria is going to change a little bit. So talking to school guidance counselor is like really important. Those schools counselors, they know what's going on with the colleges real time. So they're going to be able to guide these juniors and the senior class now who are applying, try to give them some good tips about what will happen if you do find a school that's test optional. It doesn't mean not required, it just means it's optional. And good test takers, I wasn't one of them, by the way, so I would love to see all these tests go away. but you know, a lot of students, they do really well. They figured it out, and they study really well, and they do well, and they're able to get into school, you know, that may have been a reach. So again, for the juniors and seniors, I think with the test, it's important to understand how it's going to play out. And then you asked about the seniors in particular. You know, they're off to the races right now. A lot of them have their early action, early decision applications. Maybe the decision's already been made for some of them. I'm understanding that colleges are starting to send financial aid award letters much sooner in the process, right? So that you're going to have that opportunity to really compare those schools. So the seniors right now, most of them have most of the hard work behind them. The applications, if they're not in, they're going to be in really soon. The letters of recommendation have all been gathered up. Again, for the juniors looking forward, just realizing this is coming down the road over the summer, it's really important. But the reality is, at the end of the day, when that choice is made for seniors, what school is the best fit? And we like to talk about three parts of the fit. One is academic fit. The second is the social, not a soft kind of fit. And then the third, which not a lot of people like to talk about, but you probably do, is, you know, the financial fit. Is this school affordable? And right now, the seniors and some of the juniors should be lining up to really start thinking about what happens when that bill shows up in the mailbox. Like, how am I actually going to come up with the cash to pay for whatever the bill might be?
Absolutely. Yeah, obviously, we tend to focus on the affordability. Some of the other things, as I think about my sophomore in COVID, do you have any ideas as far as how can you get a feel for a college's social fit when you can't go there? You can't walk the tour. I don't know if following the guy walking behind smiling does a lot of good. You could, having two daughters that have gone through it, you can answer better than I can. Any ideas there?
Yeah, that is really, really difficult. And quite honestly, we went to one school. We did not get out of the parking lot. And my daughter told me she didn't like the school. We literally parked there. There's just this vibe, right? And okay, you walk around, you kind of get the vibe. And so I think the answer to that is, to the extent you have access to the campus, it is important to go. What happens is, really interestingly, the parents get out of the car thinking about one thing. the students get out of the car, the kids get out of the car with something entirely different in mind. And they can tell by the way the kids dress, by the way they walk, you know, they get the feeling, can I fit in here?
Okay.
And I think that's a really important question for this class of, you know, how do you do that virtually? You have friends at the campus, maybe that would be helpful. Again, this feeling of fitting in is different for every student and every family. And that is the one place that I think is not possible to replicate virtually. You just need to be there a little bit.
Yeah, some of those qualitative things that you can't quantify, that you can't, I like numbers, you can't add a number to it. It's something where they have to feel for it. Well, that would be challenging.
Yeah, you know, we actually have an intern. She's terrific. She's been with us 3 years. She showed up on her college campus, did not visit the school, got out of the car, went into her dorm room, went downstairs and told her father she was going to withdraw. And the reason for that, Mark, was that she was driving from Massachusetts to North Carolina. And she said when they got off the highway in North Carolina and then had to drive for like another hour and a half or two, she realized how far she was from a big city. And then all of a sudden it dawned on her that she wanted to be in a city, an urban school.
Okay. Right?
And so she said, you can imagine my father wasn't real happy with that conversation, but she did the smart thing. You know, she followed her instinct. And she said, I didn't want to get stuck for these student loans. So I didn't want to show up there. And she knew if she got out right when she got in, she could cancel those loans. She took a gap year. She worked for us for a year. She actually went, retook her exams and got into a school closer to home in Boston. And she's perfectly happy. So I think it is important for these qualitative plays to work out over time. And some in this class are going to have to be really flexible. We talked about that at the beginning. Flexibility is like the key to this whole thing. And some of them are going to show up on campus and say, I don't want to be here. And if that's the case, you know, understand that and try to get a game plan together, maybe with another alternative, or take a gap year, right? And say, you know, if I'm really not sure about where to go, you know, join the something like 17 or 20% of last year's class who said, I'm not going to pay for a school I haven't been able to visit. I'm going to take a gap year and see if I can figure it out when I can get on that campus.
I like your emphasis on flexibility, and I think that's where planning early, whether it's college or any other investment, retirement, whatever it is critical, that if you start early, like with some of your grade-specific checklists at My College Corner, be able to start early on, even like we're doing it with my seventh grader, you might not use some of the planning the time you put in. But it does give you flexibility, allows you to handle those unforeseen things. Like it sounds like your interns, it sounds like maybe she had to go through the process of actually the emotion of actually being there. It was something that you couldn't define online, that she actually go through the process. And I'm, as a father, I think I would have a maybe somewhat angry emotional reaction initially. I would hope I would respect that this has to be a good fit, both from the qualitative and the quantitative side, because the 40% dropout rate, it doesn't do any good for a child to not be happy.
Yeah, no, we're singing from the same hymnal. And just as a note here, and it's on mycollegecorner.com, we have her experience up there. You can go and actually listen to what she talked about. But her father had exactly the reaction you did. He put her on a plane. He said, by the time you get home, I'm going to drive home. By the time I get there, you better have a plan for what you're going to do. So it wasn't as if, you know, they were singing Kumbaya in the car ride home. He was not happy. And I think I would not have been happy either. But again, on the other hand, like you said, you have to plan. I think your point there is so important. I like to say that you don't need like a 25-page strategic plan to get Sally into the college of her dreams. But you do need, starting in the seventh grade and the eighth grade, to start to get an idea of, like, you know, do you have an artist? Do you have an athlete? Do you have someone who's good in math? Do you have someone who's good in English? You know, if they're good in English, God bless them, but don't get them into a situation where they're going to take $100,000 in student loan debt and get out with a $40,000 a year job, right? That doesn't work.
The numbers aren't there.
The numbers aren't there. So again, a little bit of planning, I think, goes a long way. And we like to help with this at mycollegecorner.com. We actually have a financial aid calculator that has the most recent algorithm in it. So anybody can go up there. You could have a high school freshman or sophomore, just put your number in there and say, oh, that's what the expected family contribution might be when my son or daughter gets to the 12th grade. Is that, you know, how reasonable is that for me? Can I do that? How much financial aid am I going to need? And I think no matter what grade you're in, freshman year, right to seniors, as you get closer to that time when you pick the school, it becomes that much more important to actually become ultra realistic. It's no longer time to like say, oh, gee, I hope I can save this, or I wished I'd save it. It doesn't matter anymore. It's what do you have? Yep. What does that financial aid package tell you? How much debt do you need to get through this? We can talk another time, hopefully, about ways to avoid student loans, because even though I spent my career doing that, I think it's really important for people to avoid them. They ought to be the last resort, not the first option.
you want them to put you out of your old business, out of a job at your old business.
Yeah, no, you know, and the reality, though, as having worked as a lender, you don't want students who are going to default on your portfolio. That really doesn't help anybody, right? It doesn't help them. It doesn't help you. So everybody is looking for the right answer. And I believe really strongly that families hold the key to the answer. They're the ones, at the end of the day, say, this is the school that I want Johnny to go to. Johnny wants to go to this school. This is how much it's going to cost. This is how much debt they're going to have to take. That's all known. And so I get a little upset sometimes, you know, when I read these stories or these horror stories of students who get themselves in a jam, and I say, oh, wait a minute, you know, nothing changed over the last 6 years. Like, you knew this going in there. And every time the answer is, oh yeah, but I thought, and then it's like, yeah, you thought someone would come and bail you out, or you thought something good would, like, you know, but that's often not the way it works, right? You hope for the best and you plan for the worst, right? So, you know, I think a little planning here can really help people a lot.
Yeah, well put. Because sometimes I find, and this goes for other things besides college, is that folks like to keep things vague, because then they don't have to reconcile the facts. They don't have to actually acknowledge that maybe things aren't perfect. And the irony, if that's the right word, is that sometimes if they actually look at things earlier and know what their EFC is, know what the family might have to come up with, they might have actually in a better position if they would have looked 2, 3, 4, 5 years earlier without a lot of effort, as opposed to waiting for the last minute and saying, well, this doesn't work.
Yeah, no question about that. And, you know, one of the surprises that a lot of families get, and I just had this conversation in December with a woman who has a sophomore, and she said to me, well, you know, next year I'm going to have to use my tax return for financial aid. And I said, oh no, like, newsflash, you know, your 2020 tax return is the one that you're going to use for your 2022 application, right? And that was, again, just knowing that would have changed her behavior just a little bit, and maybe enough to help. She thought she was on top of it and a year early. So again, knowing these little details, and we talk about it in the book, we talk about it at My College Corner. I know you talk about it with your clients and your friends as well. Just knowing these little pieces that are really ultra important can really change the outcome for a family.
Absolutely. I have very few people, if any, who knew what things look like, actually got into too much trouble. Even if you don't, because if you know what something might happen, what the child's debt load might look like, and we're getting a little bit of on tangent, I'm not sure I wanted to go here, but because this is something I preach, and I think you're the same, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a child coming out with debt, it sounds like you subscribe or prescribe to the 1-to-1 ratio.
Yeah, I think as long as their total amount of debt is less than their starting salary, that's probably a manageable amount of debt. And, you know, I tell people responsible borrowing is actually really good. Both my girls had loans. I made sure that they had loans getting out. It helped them get a pretty good credit score out of the box, right? So, you know, you can actually use loans to your advantage. The one thing I tell parents all the time, and I'm sure you do as well, is, you know, don't have the college payment as the makeup for all the things you think you did wrong with your kid, you know, over the years.
Well, this is
not the time to take your retirement savings and put it into the college bill, right? I'm just so opposed to that kind of thinking that you can make it all up with one big loan or something. You know, you can be smart about it. Like you said, just look around, see what you have, be realistic, and you can have a great outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Well put. Yeah, I'm a firm believer in retirement first. You know, and I think you've said this, you know, you can finance a college, you really can't finance retirement. It doesn't mean you ignore it. This, you need to know what's expected of the parents and the child.
Yeah,
well put. A lot of valuable information. We're just about out of time here. Any last minute, helpful tips for parents as they get those aid letters or anything else you'd like to close on?
Yeah, I just like to say that everybody needs to take a deep breath, you know, and really sometimes just relax and think about this in as an unemotional way as possible, right? This is, again, not the time to play makeup for anything that you think happened or didn't happen, and be realistic, you know, and really look at that and say, okay, there's going to be an invoice that's going to show up in my email not too far from now. And, you know, when that happens, am I going to say, oh no, what did I get myself into? Or are you going to say, okay, I understood this was coming. I'm not happy about it maybe, but this is how it's going to work. And I'm going to write that check or I'm going to take that loan. But just make sure you thought a little bit about it and don't be surprised and try not to just react. Try to plan a little bit and then execute the plan and you'll have a great outcome. And the last thing is just believe in your son and daughter. They got as far as they have. Their instincts are actually quite good at this point, maybe not fully defined, but they're quite good. And they have a pretty good idea what they want to do. Just try to support them as much as you can.
Oh, perfect. Thank you, John. Really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us. This will be extremely helpful to all our listeners and our private clients and employees. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mark. Thank you.
I told you you'd find that that interview useful. And I will put John's website and book information in the podcast verbiage. And once again, I thank you for spending time with me. Thank you for sharing your college funding journey with me. Until next time.